This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome into the Lombardi Line, presented by DraftKings, alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. Lots to get into over the course of the next 2 hours. Conference finals start tonight in the NBA. Hockey with an exciting Game 7 yesterday, and NFL players are back on the field for OTAs. 21 teams yesterday, 8 more today. And with that, Michael, the things that make the news around OTAs are, of course, the guys who are showing up when maybe we anticipated they might not. And then, of course, the players who have ongoing contract negotiations and don't show up. There's only so much we can read into this at this point, but there are a lot of names that are making the rounds here.
No question. But first of all, I want to know, how engaged did you have the Edmonton Oilers in your dance card to get to the vision, to get to the conference finals? I mean, did you have that one, or did you tease that one, or did you have one of those plays last night? I want to know that first.
So they're a team, Michael, that like always feel like they should make it to a certain point and then they let you down. I was so excited for them last night to be able to hold on. And I tweeted about it. I thought for a second that Vancouver might end up pulling a Timberwolves like against Denver. Like, I truly thought when they were down 3-0 and Vancouver started pushing to score those two goals late that they might get a third one. But everybody that bet the under is happy. Everybody that bet the Oilers is happy. And I'm happy for Edmonton to get to this point for sure.
Yeah, and I'm happy the Rangers, we get to watch the Garden for at least two more games against a very good Panther team. But to answer your question, I think, look, the OTAs get overblown in terms of who's there, who's not. You know, let's take T. Higgins, for example. You know, he doesn't have a contract, so he can't go. Well, which is kind of a mistake, because if when he signs that contract, it's guaranteed for skill and injury. Whereas right now, if he goes out and he hurts himself away from football, he loses $21 million. Mm-hmm. God forbid that happen. So that's the danger that you run into, right? And so, but if he signs the contract, there's no obligation for him to be at OTAs. There's none. He could stay out. It's only you have to come to training camp. So it doesn't seem, it's not a smart play for him not to sign his tender. Eventually, he's going to sign his tender. And why not protect yourself? Because if something happens outside of football, what we call a non-football related injury, and anytime you're working out on your own, whether you're training for football or not, that qualifies. So those are things. But, you know, like CD Lamb not coming in, big deal? Not really. He's got a fifth year. The offense is staying the same. You know, he has a contract. He can't hold out or else it's going to get Chris Jones expensive. So the variables are all about, look, if I can just create a little wave in the thinking, maybe they'll pay more attention to me and get a deal done.
Yeah, and to your point, like OTAs are voluntary. Once we hit mandatory mini camp in June, we start getting into training camp. Like that's when, this is kind of a precursor to that. We get our idea of who's going to show up, who's not, and then we go from there. But you mentioned T. Higgins, of course. He is the only player that was franchise tagged throughout this offseason that was not able to sign a long-term deal. So we'll see if and when he signs that tender so that he can be on the team, because we all expect that he will as the Bengals make a push. But CeeDee Lamb nor Micah Parsons at OTAs. Dak Prescott, I haven't seen a firm report one way or the other, but he's expected to be there this week. Also, no Justin Jefferson out there at OTAs with the Minnesota Vikings, Michael. And he's the one that, to me, I'm curious your thoughts on this. Because Minnesota did just draft a new young quarterback in J.J. McCarthy, they're bringing in Sam Darnold on a one-year deal who hasn't been around. I mean, Justin Jefferson doesn't need to prove anything to anybody. He obviously wants a long-term deal. He's going to be the highest paid non-quarterback in the NFL when he gets this signed eventually. But you would think, just as a player trying to develop chemistry, after all you've really known in the league to this point is Kirk Cousins, to start building that bond, I would think as a player you would want to do that.
Yeah, I would think so, too, eventually. But I think, you know, we're talking about a great sum of money here. And, you know, he has the fifth year, so he will get fined if he doesn't come in. I mean, he's going to be the highest paid wide receiver in the league. We know this. And this contract is going to be shattering. It's going to, everybody's going to want to have another bite of the apple, because what we've seen is a lot of guys who are not great get huge contracts, who are not number one receivers. Jefferson's a number one receiver. He's going to get paid. I think to me, not being there now in these OTA days, not as a big deal. Mini camp and then training camp, he's got to be there. And the thing you worry about is how many times do guys miss this time, right? And then they don't have as good a season, or they're not in shape, or they have something go wrong with them. Something happens, right? So for me, it's like, wow, it's like you're hurting yourself a little bit. Look, I know you don't want to get overworked. I get that. And it's the coach's job to manage the reps at this time. But it's also the players got to get paid, but you also don't want to hurt. You want to have a great season, too. You don't want to come out and not be the best version of yourself.
Yeah, the big one, obviously, with me being a 49ers fan, that always comes to mind for me is 2 years ago when Deebo Samuel was going through his negotiations.
Right.
And he said the following offseason, I felt like that hindered me and I wasn't able to be my best self because my mind was elsewhere and I wasn't on the field with my teammates throughout that process. So a great point by you there. Also with the Houston Texans, a couple of their new pieces not on site reportedly, neither Stephon Diggs nor Danielle Hunter at OTAs for Houston out the gates.
Well, I mean, to me, this just goes back to the contract. When you sign a guy from a team that's not been with you, one of the things you want to put in the contract is an offseason workout. You want him around your team because if you're going to pay him that kind of money, and obviously they redid Diggs's contract and they gave Hunter a ton of money, if you're going to pay that kind of money, you want to have some of it in the offseason program in terms of the presence there. And that's really important to your team around. You want your best players or your highest paid players to become the leaders of the team, to show work ethic. That's a little bit disappointing, right? But, they might have prior commitments. I don't know exactly what's going on, and maybe they worked it out in the contract. It's a minor thing, but to me, one of the things that you always wanted to do with contracts is make the players who you're giving the money to show up so they're showing their teammates they're in this thing completely.
Yeah, and high expectations, obviously, for this new version of the Houston Texans, who took a massive step forward last year. Can they continue to build on that? A +110 favorite in the division. And as we continue our OTA attendance roll call here, let's go to the quarterbacks, because we talked yesterday about Tua Tagovailoa being at the facility for the Miami Dolphins and his contract situation. Same situation for Trevor Lawrence, who's in line for a big payday. Who of those two do you think gets a deal done first?
Well, I think Lawrence will get one first. I think Tua is probably waiting because he knows that, he has Chris Greer completely in his corner, that they feel like Tua is the guy that, can lead them to the promised land. I think certainly, what we see in Lawrence, we're waiting for him to kind of break through that shell, right? I think it's really important. My sense of it is it'll be Lawrence first and then Tua will over that. I don't think Lee Steinberg will go first in the deal. I think now that they have the Goff deal done, he knows the target that he has to hit and try to get above that. I think that's kind of where I see this going. But I would say Lawrence first and then this. Look, I think there's so much pressure on Lawrence. I know they need to get a deal done. I get that. But he's got to play better, Stormy. He has to play better because, he might sign this deal, and if they don't win games or make the playoffs, are they going to bring Peterson back? I mean, it's a big year for Peterson. He blew out the entire defensive coaching staff. They made changes there. They've signed more receivers than you know what to do with, right? They got all these receivers. Have they improved the offensive line? I don't know. Are they good enough on defense? We shall see. But it comes down to this kid's ability to throw the ball down the field. Has never averaged over 7.2 yards per attempt. Now, in fairness to Lawrence, I don't think they've done a great job protecting him. Mm-hmm. I don't think they've done a great job of protecting him. And I think to me, who's the backup runner to ATN? If ATN gets hurt, is it Bixby? I don't know about that, right? Mm-hmm. I know Trent Baalke thinks that's the case. But for me, I think this is a lot of question marks on how good is Lawrence? Like, how good is he? When this contract comes in, and if it's over 50, are we sure he's that good? And I was a huge fan. I had my hand up saying he's generational in terms of his talent. But here's the issue. He's not a big man. He's 215 pounds. He's tall. He's linear. And what he did in college, when you go back and watch him at Clemson, he ran a lot. He ran a lot. And he made a lot of plays with his feet. I would say this. You're going to find this crazy, but Jaden Daniels and Lawrence were similar in how they played college football, right? They threw it down the field, made plays, but then they ran too effectively. But he can't run in pro football like that. He's not big enough. He's not Josh Allen. This is the problem. And so you get lured into those plays, but he's got to stay healthy. But I think part of what he has to do is run, and I don't think he can do that.
Well, and you mentioned staying healthy.
Consistently and stay healthy.
Sure. With the health factor of it, last year, the first year where he really dealt with compounding injuries, the knee, ankle, shoulder, concussion. And to your point about the way that he played in college, though, if you're paying him, which you're going to, you're paying him to vault into this elite stratosphere of quarterback that you believe he can be, to be the guy that we saw from him in college and that generational talent you referenced, which he has not proven to be at the NFL level. I know he threw for 4,000 yards last year, but you look through the turnovers, 14 interceptions, tied for fourth most picks, an NFL high 21 turnovers, 7 lost fumbles last year. He had a lot of issues, and this team is going to really rely on him. The start of the season prior to the injuries, though, is where you lean back and say, okay, maybe this is what he could be. They were 8-3. He had the second best completion percentage in the league, finished the year at 65.6% completion, bottom of the league in QBR. Like, there are things that you need to hope he's the first season part of the season of the guy, not the back end season of the guy.
Exactly. And I think to me, the concern is there hasn't been that, you know, what you want to see is that jump. You want to see that spike, and we haven't seen it. For rookie year with Urban Meyer, I get it. Darrell Bevell's the head, the offense coordinator, 6.0 yards per attempt in 17 games. That's horrendous, right? You know, the next year he comes back, he averages 7. And last year it's 7-1. He barely went up. And then as he has gone up, his interception percentage went from 1.4 to 2.5.
I think we got to throw year one out, to your point about the Urban Meyer situation. But even in the last 2 years, we haven't seen fully what we need to see in terms of that leap. We'll be right back. We're just getting started here on the Lombardi Line. Pick Your Poison, NFL Scheduling Spots Edition, next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
In addition to watching and listening to VSiN Live, don't forget about all the betting tools and content available at VSiN.com. Best bets from hosts and guests, betting splits, pro tips and trends. And right now on the homepage, VSiN senior NBA analyst Jonathan Von Tobel has previews, picks and predictions up for the Eastern and Western Conference Finals. We've got daily write-ups in the NHL, MLB, WNBA, and plenty of NFL offseason information. Adam Burke yesterday posting a blueprint for all 18 weeks of Survivor, and Dave Tooley with an early deep dive on week one of the schedule. Head to vsin.com today. Welcome back into the Lombardi Line alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. And to put a bow quickly on our Trevor Lawrence conversation that we started off the show with, Michael, in terms of the Jags' big picture this year, they opened with a win total of 9.5. It was quickly bet down to 8.5. Last year, they were an odds-on favorite in the division. This year, it's the Houston Texans, the favorite. They're kind of that secondary option. They're even money to make the playoffs. How do you perceive this Jacksonville Jaguars team going into 2024 overall?
Well, I think there's a lot of question marks, starting with the quarterback, right? Are they good enough there? And then your question marks lingered to the defense. They made a huge defensive shift. They fired almost every defensive coach. They brought in Ryan Nielsen from the Atlanta Falcons in terms of to change the scheme. And, you know, they're going to be what we call a quarters team. They're going to not be as much man-to-man as they were. That's what he ran in Atlanta. You know, they're going to try to blitz and get pressure. They still don't have another guy on the alongside of Josh Allen. I mean, they picked Travion Walker over Hutchinson because he has size and speed. And you look at that and say, wow, he's really good. But his instincts and production, the one thing when you're in the league and you look at Jacksonville, it's fairly clear to see that the man building the team, Trent Baalke, is huge into size and speed. This is, when I watch them, I say, okay, Baalke's wants size, speed. But they miss a level of instinct with some of their players because, you know, when you're just wrapped up in a size and speed, you kind of forgive a little bit in terms of, like, a guy that has great instincts. You know, Walker's more bigger and stronger than Hutchinson, but Hutchinson's actually a better football player. So I see a team that has talent, that has athleticism and has size and speed. It just hasn't all come together. And, you know, the first year with what you would think with Peterson was Lawrence's best year. Yep. And then he started out and then he got hurt, but then he wasn't the same player. So, there's a lot of pressure on Peterson. You know, it's so funny, Stormy. People don't realize this, But Byron Leftwich would have been the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, but he didn't want to work with Balke. He refused to take the job with Balke there. So they hired Peterson, and now Leftwich doesn't even have a job in the league. Could you imagine that?
Yeah, crazy to think about for sure. This Jacksonville team, by the way, Michael, we'll find out pretty early what this team is. Yeah. Week one at Miami, week two against the Browns, week three Monday Night Football against the Buffalo Bills in Orchard Park. Then they're at the Texans, and then they have Anthony Richardson in the Colts as he looks to get more than four games under his belt, the young quarterback there. So we'll see really quickly what our perception of Jacksonville and Trevor Lawrence will be out the gates. I want to do a little exercise here that producer Elliot and I were talking about yesterday called Pick Your Poison as we continue to dive through the NFL schedule. And, you know, sometimes there are situations on the schedule that we just don't like. But what would you rather have if you were looking up your schedule and you found out? So let's start with those Jacksonville Jaguars, Michael. Would you rather have back-to-back London games like the Jags do, or be like the Chiefs and play 6 of 7 days out of the week throughout this football season? Pick your poison.
I think I'd rather have back-to-back over in London. We're comfortable there, right? I think the 6 out of 7, you know, here's what happens when you have 6 out of 7 different days. The NFL, every day is a day, a certain routine day. So if you're playing Sunday at 1, Monday's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, right? You do that, okay? But if you're playing Wednesday, then all of a sudden Sunday becomes a Thursday, Monday becomes a Friday, you know, it all changes. Yeah. You don't change, you just rename the day, even though it's a completely different day. And the players get all confused. Oh, we're on a Tuesday schedule here, but really it's Thursday. Yeah, I know, but we're on a Tuesday schedule. Like, it's like you're all messed up, right? So that's a hard thing to do. And then it limits how much practice you can do and how much time on the field because of the variations. That's why last year, you know, the Texans had Sunday at 1, 17 weeks. They never had to mess around with those. Oh, today's really a Saturday. No, it's a Tuesday. Okay, got it. And so I think that helps you. So I think I'd rather go over there, bond the team in London. They know how to do it and stay there.
So I think I already know your answer then for this next one. If you're picking your poison between the Jets, who have 6 primetime games, 7 standalone games the first 11 weeks of the season, or the Carolina Panthers, who don't have a single one throughout the course of the entire season, what would you rather have on your schedule? I mean, the Panthers, it's unfortunate you don't get to be on primetime and get people to know your team and have that stage, but consistency in terms of routine, as you're talking about.
Yeah, well, you always want the routine. I mean, but I think, too, sometimes, like, I wouldn't dismiss these national games because the one thing about playing on national TV, you got to play good or else you're going to get embarrassed, right? You got to play good. And I think, to me, that's a great motivator. Now, 6 makes it really hard, right? 6 makes it hard to do. But I think, to me, it gives you a chance to really ramp up your players, right? Hey, here we are. You know, we got to play good. This is what we're doing. And, you know, let's play our best football. And if you can play good on a night thing, then obviously that's going to be something really important. But I think that I'd rather stay consistent. 2 or 3 night games, that's good. 6 is an awful lot, especially with the travel that comes into play.
Well, the Jets owe the NFL, according to Mike North. But if you're looking at reports coming out of Jets camp, by the way, here, Michael, they're already ramped up. Aaron Rodgers, 5 for 5, passes to 5 different receivers and 7 on 7. They're ready to go.
Right. Oh, they're perfect. I mean, we know. I mean, one thing about they're going to get covered perfectly, right? I mean, they're going to get covered like you can't believe. I just think it's funny that we get so wrapped up into completed passes against where you're not allowed to be defensive. You're not allowed to be challenge the receiver. Actually, if you don't have completed passes, something's really wrong.
That's a great point because everything should be perfect for you at this point. Aaron Rodgers,
everything should be perfect, right?
No question about it. His former teammate, by the way, Devontae Adams, not at the start of Raiders OTAs, it appears. We also saw it come through Brandon Ayuk, as expected, with the San Francisco 49ers. He has yet to show up. Speaking of San Francisco, would you rather have 21 fewer days of rest than your opponents? From week 7 to 13, San Francisco, of the 6 opponents they face, the Chiefs, Cowboys, Seahawks, and Bills will all be coming off respective bye weeks, or be the Chargers and have to travel more than anybody else in the league. 26,803 miles will be traveled from Los Angeles this year.
I'd rather be on the airplane. I think it's really hard to have your opponent have rest and you don't. The airplane's tough travel, right? But they're comfortable. They're sitting there. They're not on a Frontier flight in a middle seat with just getting nothing and not even getting snacks, right? Let's be clear here, right? It's pretty nice. It's not, you know, it's not Trek trendy nice, but it's nice. And so, you know, I mean, that's not as bad thing. You got a list of the time zones, we get there. But this, you know, the Chiefs off a bye, you know they're good. Every team gets an extra time to spend to prepare for you, and that makes it really hard.
Would you rather be like the Chicago Bears and have six division matchups the last eight games of the season, or start off with a ton of division games like the Indianapolis Colts, who have four division matchups in their first eight games? Pick your poison.
I think I would have the Bears. I would rather have that because I think it's going to take us time to get everything under cover. Right. I think when you're starting with a young quarterback and it's new, you peak a little late. Look at the Packers. Look at what Jordan Love, how improved he was from the time he opened the season until the end of the year. I think that's really important. So I think I would rather have it later in the year to get my team better. Cause look, here's the reality. There's no shortcut. There's no easy game, right? And so it's just a challenge. And I think ultimately you're going to have to beat good teams to get in there.
In an ideal situation, when we look at the schedule, Michael, teams always want that mid-season bye. But there are four teams this year that have a week bye week in week 15, six that have one the back end of the season in week 14. Would you rather an early bye or late?
I would rather have a late bye. I think because you need to heal your wounds. You need to get healthier. You know, I think to me, I'd rather have a bye. Now, week 14 is a little extreme. I'd rather have it in week 8. Week 14 is long because you're it's like running a marathon. That last 4 miles, you're kind of your tongue's hanging out. We're going to get a break. I think I'd rather have that. But week 5 is a little too early, right? Week 5 is a little too early.
Six teams, again, the bye week that late in week 14. That was a little bit surprising when we looked at the schedule initially. Okay, great start. We're going to have to hit the break here in a moment, but when we come back, the one and only Will Hill joins the show, Michael. Surely, I already know you're going to critique his scheduling mayhem. We haven't had a chance to talk to him since the schedule came out last Wednesday. He was very, very busy putting the thing together. This we know. He's also locked and loaded with bets for the NBA postseason. Excited to have Will Hill join us coming up next on the Lombardi Line. Stick around.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We here at the Lombardi Line are always here to help you out. We've got your back. And while usually at VSiN, our annual subscription is $240, now when you use our promo code Lombardi, you can get a full subscription for just $199. Sign up today. We're also giving you an extra 2 months for free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day. And all you need to do is use our promo code Lombardi. With VSiN Pro, you gain instant access to our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for each and every game. Betting systems, premium analysis, 24/7 video access. VSiN.com/subscribe is how you can claim your 14 months of VSiN Pro, only $199. And again, make sure you use that promo code Lombardi. This is the Lombardi Line. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you as we welcome into the show like we do every week around this time. VSiN's own Will Hill on the Progressive Guest Line, host of the Should Have Bet More podcast, also Fox Sports Bear Bets podcast with Chris Felica. And Michael, I know right out the gate you have a very important question for Will about the schedule that he worked so hard on last week.
Yeah. I mean, what was the biggest challenge as you were putting this schedule together? And are you happy with week one? That's the most important thing. Are you happy with week one? So my Texans aren't going to be complaining about the week one schedule for 4 weeks.
You know, it's funny. You guys make fun of me for all these different jobs and being able to do all these different things. Well, we found something I can't do, and that is fix Wi-Fi outages, because I am down the internet and I'm a little cranky. I'm not going to be as charming as usual. So I just want you guys to brace for that. But look, it's football. It's week one. I don't care who plays who. I'm excited to get it. I get a little, I don't know. I What interests me is the end of the year, what games they choose to flex out, what they put in that like that last Sunday of the season, like when it's playoff scenarios. But when it's week one, man, it's all good. I'm so excited to to have these lines start making bets. It's good to just have football back. And by the time these finals end with the NBA, NHL, we're only like 6 weeks away from the Hall of Fame game. So it gets here pretty quick.
Yeah, that's a good point. It'll be here before we know it. And we know the Wi-Fi isn't out because the Bills aren't getting paid. We were talking last night. You had a couple of nice winners in the NHL with Canucks and Oilers yesterday. So we know that the tickets are coming home for you, Will.
Yeah, the Game 7 under trend pays off. Now, I didn't bet the full game under because they've been adjusting this. For years, it was just you blindly bet the under in NBA, NHL Game 7s, and it comes through. The basketball ones, they've been adjusting it by like 8-9 points just right off the top at the open. The NHL one, and I can't name five players in the NHL, but they moved that an entire goal where Oilers-Canucks was always 6.5 all series, and then boom, it opens. I think it opened 6 for a second, but before you know it, it's 5.5. But the scoreless first period, and the under still got home despite the adjustment.
How about when you watched the Denver-Minnesota series, were you as shocked as everybody was that Minnesota was able to come back from 20 down and turn that thing around and hold the Nuggets to a below 45% shooting percentage?
Shocked. Still shocked. I still can't believe it. I'm still just in utter amazement. I actually think if they won, they would have won the championship. I think this is huge for Boston. I think Boston, man, they've got every break this postseason. Now, look, you play who you play. You don't have to apologize for it, but I think this sets up well for Boston. But yes, when they went up 20, I mean, I was just waiting to record the podcast, maybe record it early, get to bed. I mean, this thing is over with. And then you look up, and I think 12 was the first time I said, wow, it's only 12. Feels like the game was over. Then before you know, 9, 7, 6. And it's just Denver couldn't score. Like Denver scored basically 35 points in the second half. They basically had 30 points with a minute left, minute and a half left, and then he got some garbage points. But you know, even Jokic wasn't great. Jokic was settling for a lot of threes. He missed his first 7 threes. Porter gave him nothing. I mean, imagine making $35, $40 million a year, whatever he makes. Porter scored 7 points a game the last 4 games of this series. Just amazing how little they got out of the role players. Look, it's why we all kind of bow at what New England was able to do, the Patriots, for all those years, 2 decades of basically going to the conference title game and Super Bowls every year, every other year. It's not easy to win. It's not. Belichick always talked about, what was it, climbing the mountain every year. It's not easy to climb that mountain. People are hunting for you. The Nuggets after the game said, hey, we were exhausted. We were the hunted. This is different. And it's hard to win. It's supposed to be hard to win. That's why teams drink champagne and smoke cigars and pour champagne at each other's head after they win championships. It's really hard. And yeah, but an absolute shocking result for sure.
Well, with that, how do you view the Timberwolves moving forward as they get set for a best of 7 against the Dallas Mavericks? They are a team that I feel like for all intents and purposes is rolling at the right time. They're the favorite in the series. They've taken money, open minus 150, got up to minus 190, kind of settled out there at minus 170. Do you think that's the right side?
I wouldn't just pencil them into the finals here. Now, I lean towards Minnesota just because they do have the 7th game at home, and I just don't know how healthy Luka is in the series. Once it starts, it's every other day. My bet here is over 5.5 games. We're looking at a long series, I think. 6-7 gamer. If this series were in Dallas, I'd probably pick Dallas. And again, if Luka was healthy, I'd probably pick Dallas. I think these games are going to be close. I think they're going to be low scoring because Dallas has a really underrated defense. Dallas is enormous. Minnesota is going to see a defense I don't think they've really seen before. I don't know. Minnesota does have a lot of bodies to throw at Luka, but I don't know who the perfect one is. Like Edwards is a good guy to guard him, but man, that's a lot to ask of Edwards to do what he does on offense and also guard Luka. McDaniels has the size, the length, the profile to guard him, but McDaniels has a habit of fouling a lot. That's not ideal. So I think these teams are going to trade punches. I think this is going to be a long series. And look, I would pick Minnesota again just because they do have home court, and I'm not sure about Luka, and I do think every other day favors Minnesota. But remember, like last round, home court did not mean a whole lot in the West. Road teams went 8-5, and really, if OKC didn't gag that game away Saturday night, road teams would have been 9-4. So home court just hasn't meant as much as it's meant in past years. So good series, long series. I'd be very careful about penciling Minnesota in. At the end of the day, I'll pick them in 7. But this idea that they're just going to walk into the finals now is not to me the correct one. If I had to bet it just at the price, the plus money on Denver, on Dallas, especially if Dallas were to lose game one and you can get them, plus 275, something like that, I'd be very tempted to jump in on Dallas because I love Kidd as a coach. I love their size. I think this is going to be a hell of a series.
And I think you're right, Will. I think Dallas makes really good adjustments, and the number will go up. And Dallas has proven that they coach really well. And if they get beat in a game like they did the opening game in Oklahoma City, they bounce back. They show kind of they have that competitive pride, and they're a really good team, and they have two elite players. How about Boston? Are you going to be one of those people that bet Boston minus 1,000 to win the series?
No, I jumped on to win the East a few weeks ago. I think when Giannis got hurt, I said, you know what, the writing's on the wall here. I didn't get the best number, but I think -150, -160. Or like, you know what, this is shaping up well for Boston. I do think they're in for a bit of a culture shock tonight in game one here. I like Indy plus the 10 because they play Miami, no Butler. They played the Cavs, no Mitchell the last couple games. Those are really neutered offenses. They're going to get a Pacer team that's going to go, go, go. They're going to shoot. They're going to run. They're going to score. They're going to play at a different speed than the Celtics have seen. It's almost like going from a knuckleball pitcher to a guy throwing 100 miles an hour. You better be focused because, if you kind of lollygag back on defense, if you lose focus for a second, Pacers are going to run right by you. So I think Indy's going to score. I think Boston's going to win the series, whether it's 5-6. Boston doesn't sweep anybody. They just don't seem to have the focus 4 games at a time. They do have the length to throw at Haliburton where the Knicks didn't, where Knicks were guarding them with Brunson and Burks and these smaller defenders. The Celtics can put White on them. They can put Holiday on them. I think probably Holiday starts on them where you have the length to bother them. But Indy's going to score. I think they can be competitive in this series. I'll take the points tonight. I think this is going to be a culture shock a little bit for Boston here.
Yeah, how often you see a double-digit spread in a conference final, it feels a little bit crazy. But with this Pacers team, especially with how well they've played offensively at home, I like what you said about the series, like similarly going over 5.5. I mean, it's not similar, not going over 5.5 necessarily, but being a 5-6 game set that the Pacers can get one here. The over 5.5 is an angle I was looking at in this set specifically, just because they've been undefeated at home. The Pacers play kind of at a different clip when they are in that arena. I think that this could go more than 4 to 5, to your point.
Yeah, and look, it's probably not the worst idea to sprinkle a little Pacers money line, because when Boston has a bad game, it's not like they just win by one or two and they win, but they don't cover. They get blown out. They lose as big favorites all the time. They lose at home as big favorites all the time. Very kind of up and down schizophrenic team. So yeah, I think the Pacers will have moments in the series, but Boston will ultimately move on. And I hate to say it, but I do think Boston's winning the title. I just think Boston, they're going to have home court throughout. They haven't been rested. These other teams in the West are out beating each other up. 7-game series, injuries piled up. I think Boston, of course, they got to get Porzingis back, and their defense has not been as great without Porzingis the last month or so. But I do think he's on track to at least get back some point. Ideally, you'd probably like to get him back this series so he's not just thrown into the finals. But I think Boston's in good shape here to win the whole thing.
Real quick, we got about a minute. Will, you're on that steal or under train like everybody else. How come?
I mean, the back 8 games. I mean, it's the simple answer is the correct answer sometimes. And even the beginning one at Atlanta, at Denver. Denver's not an easy place to play early in the season. You better bank a hell of a lot of wins with that last 8 games where you're basically playing Super Bowl contender week after week after week. These past few years, they've gotten a 9, but they've kind of backdoored their way where they're playing backup quarterbacks, Ravens rest their starters, things like that. Not going to be as friendly this year. I think this is finally the year they stay under.
Ravens at Browns, at Bengals, Browns at Eagles, at Ravens on Saturday. The Chiefs close out the season with the Bengals. Yes, it is a gauntlet to close out the year for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Will, you're awesome. Appreciate your time as always, my friend.
Thanks, Will.
See you guys. Thanks for having
Thank
me.
You.
Appreciate it.
Will Hill, follow him on X.
We forgot
at
to ask him.
Will Hill. Yeah?
We forgot to ask him who he's going to hire as the Lakers coach, too. You know, he runs the Lakers, too. We forgot to ask him that.
Dang missed it. Opportunity.
Is it going to be J.J. Redick? Did you see that note that they think Redick could be the next Pat Riley? Rumor. I don't know if that's true. I did not see
that headline, but intrigue nonetheless. When we come back, we continue to list things this offseason. Lombardi's list of the top coordinators to be on the lookout this season.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're so close to crowning an NBA champ, and with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New to DraftKings, listen up, new customers can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Just deposit at least $5, and you'll get a bonus bet equal to your first bet if it doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code code VSIN. The crown is yours. We had Will Hill on moments ago who said he likes the Pacers plus the double digits coming up tonight. Later on in hour two, we'll get more thoughts on that series, as well as both the Eastern and Western Conference Finals with Claudia Bellafato, DraftKings Network host and betting analyst. But again, that coming up a little bit later on in the show. Where we're going to start out right here, Michael, is Lombardi's list for the week, counting down the top five new coordinators who can make an immediate impact. And I love this just in general, because with all the talk about free agency and player turnover and players coming in and out of the draft, new head coaches that are in their new positions, I think sometimes coordinators get swept under the rug a little bit here, and they are extremely important, especially like in developing continuity and chemistry among your team.
You know, and I think, too, it's a great point. I mean, look at what Mike McDonald was able to do for the Baltimore Ravens, right? And so you see this all the time. Jim Schwartz last year going to Cleveland changed their whole defense, right? If Jim Schwartz would have gone to Green Bay, what would that have looked like? And so I think these are really important hirings. And when you get the right coach in the right system, Ben Johnson, who knew how good of a coach Ben Johnson was for Detroit, but he sure made a big difference for the Lions. So I think these are the untold behind the scenes where we as a better and betting networks, we don't pay enough attention to them. You know, I was listening to somebody talking about Atlanta offense, and they were complaining about Atlanta doesn't use they're never in 11 personnel. And I'm sitting there, I'm listening to it, and I'm like, they're killing Arthur Smith, right? they're in 11. Atlanta was in 11 most of the time last year because Kyle Pitts isn't a tight end. He's a wide receiver. So they're in 11 all the time. So, you know, guys get criticized for not being good coordinators by people that don't understand what the hell's going on. Like, Atlanta was an 11 team last year because they had to be, because Pitts can't block anybody. So you have to kind of look into that. And I think he'll do a good job. I think Arthur going into Pittsburgh, I think that's a good marriage right there.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that a little bit further, because as I look at your list here, we are a little defensive coordinator heavy. The one offensive coordinator that you have in a new place you expect to make an immediate impact is Arthur Smith over there in Pittsburgh, a team that has a new quarterback situation, has a lot of talent offensively. But as you were just saying, a lot of the, you know, questions and critiques about Arthur Smith in Atlanta were about underutilizing the talent that they had. Why do you think Smith can get the most out of this group in Pittsburgh?
Well, because he's not working around players that have alignment of positions that don't really play the position, right? So if you're going to call plays for the Falcons and you want to be an 11 personnel team, which is what all the analytical community wants them to be, right? Well, who's going to block if you're in 70 protection? Is Pitts going to stay in and block a defensive end? I don't think so. Okay. So you can't run 70 protection, right? Is Bijan Robinson going to handle the back? I don't know. Can he handle the blitzer? I don't know. Could he handle Parsons coming off the edge? There you're asking an awful lot, right? So a lot of this, when you start looking at just formation groupings, the way they break coaches down, and you don't understand that there's players that go into the plays, then you're really going to get a bad view of somebody. Smith will run the ball. He will have a good run game. Now, obviously, he's got to develop the play-action pass game. He's had success with Ryan Tannehill doing that. Look, if Pittsburgh gets behind, they're not going to win very many games. They're not going to have a drop. You don't want a drop-back pass game with Russell Wilson. So they're going to have to play, slow it down, play their style, create turnovers with their defense, don't give the ball away, get the game into the fourth quarter and win it. But that's kind of the way they've always played.
In six of the seven losses last year, so they won 10 games last year. In six of the seven losses, the Steelers offense scored 13 points or fewer. Like, just imagine, like, the defense played so well. You're losing games because of that. Just imagine if the offense came together. So I understand a lot of reason to believe positivity there. We'll see if they can overcome the back end of the schedule, though, like we talked about with Will in the last segment. Let's go to the first defensive coordinator on the list, though. In Green Bay, Jeff Hafley takes over for the departed Joe Barry. Why do you have confidence in him?
Well, I think it gives a fresh approach, right? And Hafley has coached the back end to the front end, which is important. And look, this is a team that couldn't make any plays on the football. They're 31st in the National Football League in interceptions. And really what killed the Packers last year was their inability to stop the run. Then there were games where they could, right? They've got a good front. They should be able to stop the run. They're physical up front. But last year they were 28th in yards allowed on the ground, teams went in there and tried to throw the ball. Two things hurt Green Bay last year. They could not turn the ball over with their defense. 31st in interceptions, 23rd overall in defensive committed turnovers, forcing the defense. And so that, and then they couldn't stop the run. And when you can't stop the run, it really becomes down to your inability to tackle, your inability to play physical, and you never get control of the football game. You never can get control of the game, because if they can get 3.5, 3.5, 4, they're going to keep the ball. And I think that Halfley will do a better job of controlling the run. I think he'll move pieces around. We don't talk enough about this either, Stormy. If you're a stagnant defense where you have guys line up in the same place all the time, the offense can dictate and control the pace of the game. So, for example, if you want to put a player over on the left side of the defense, or the right side of the defense, left side of the offense, and you just have to get in a formation, he's there. He's going against your best player. But when you have unpredictability with alignment, then it becomes a challenge. San Francisco doesn't get in this game because San Francisco feels like they're so good up front, they don't need to worry about it. Whereas the Jets do this too, and sometimes it creates problems for them.
Your point with the run defense, you said it ranked 28th in rushing yards allowed per game, 23rd in yards allowed per rush, and 31st in the league with 7 interceptions only for the entire season. Wild to think about. There are 2 coordinators, by the way, in the NFC East that you're looking at, in the Dallas Cowboys and Philadelphia Eagles, also the new DC in Seattle. Take us through it.
Well, let's talk with Mike Zimmer, right? Mike Zimmer is about third down, right? And last year, when you look at the Cowboys on those third down defense, they were good. They were the second best third down team in the league with Dan Quinn. They were very good. And, you know, when you watch them play, they were able to create turnovers even without Diggs. So they're 5th overall in points allowed and yards. So Zimmer will come in, and it's a different approach. But he's a really good coach in terms of attacking the opponent. I think they'll play better run defense, and I think they'll play better in the red zone. They were still good in the red zone last year. I mean, all the things Dallas did last year, but they were 19th in the league in the red zone. They were 14th on third down. I think those numbers will go up with Zimmer when you look at that. Now, Philly, let's talk about them for a second. Philly, you know, there was an issue with Philly, and certainly it had to do with their talent as much as their coaching, right? You know, Sean Desai took a lot of the blame. They demoted him, and then they brought in Matt Patricia. But a lot of this problems in Philly stem from their inability to stay in condition. Remember, they gave up 35 points to Arizona, and it wasn't a pretty 35. They gave up 32 to Baker Mayfield. They couldn't run. Now, they try to fix it with their defensive front, right? So they get Bryce Huff in there. They keep Sweat, you know, but they got to stay in shape. They don't practice hard enough at times. And I think Vic Fangio probably will come in, and they'll listen to him a little bit more. And he'll try to play the coverage that fits him. And I think their draft helped them, because getting Mitchell in there certainly will help them in terms of being able to have a third corner and a reliable third corner.
Yeah, Quinyon Mitchell, by the way, 11-1 to be the defensive rookie of the year, but somebody expected to make an immediate impact. Kellen Moore made this list, Michael. I'm so surprised.
I'm fascinated to see what Moore will do, because, look, I think the success of Philly, and I think Philly had cold water slapped on their face last year because they didn't run the ball, and Hurts all of a sudden they paid all this money to, and he looked very pedestrian-like. And so what happened? He didn't connect to his teammates. I think the reason for Barkley was now they started to zig when everybody else was zagging. They went back to saying, okay, we need a running game. We need a leap back. They could have signed Miles Sanders. They said, no, we'll go with a cheaper variation. We'll do Swift. We'll do Penny. We'll do all this. Didn't work. They know they have to run the ball. It's going to be fascinating to see what Kellen Moore does with the offense. Will he run it? And then will Kellen Moore adapt to – look, Hurts is a really good player, but he has to be half-field reads, play-action pass. That's where he's working his best. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean anything's wrong with it. That's just how he operates. If they can't do that, if they try to read this through horizontally, it will be a problem for them.
And after the back end of last season fell apart for the Philadelphia Eagles, very high expectations to get back on track and get back to the team that Philly was 2 years ago and the team that they thought they were early on last season. Okay, we're going to hit the break here. When we come back, resetting for hour 2 of the Lombardi Line. Lots to get to in regards to the NFL, the schedule, the what are we, not a report card, but the attendance list for OTAs continues to grow longer. And what's on Michael's mind? Stick around. So much more to come on the Lombardi Line.